Hello and welcome to CJ Evolution, the podcast dedicated to helping criminal justice professionals like you. Now here's your host, fellow CJ Evolutionary, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello everybody, welcome back. Episode 174 of CJ Evolution. Patrick here, host and creator. Whatever you were doing, wherever you were at, thank you for spending a little bit of your valuable time with me. We continue to grow because of you, the supporter. So thank you so much. Special thanks to all the brave men and women out there serving in the criminal justice profession. Thank you for your support and doing a very difficult job in a very difficult environment. I am super pumped to have Bernard Schaefer on the podcast. He is a 20-year law enforcement veteran. He's a decorated criminal investigator, narcotics expert, and a child forensic interviewer. He is also an accomplished author, which is amazing that he can juggle all this. We're going to talk about it in the show. And one of the reasons I wanted and I asked Bernard to come on the show is because he is the epitome. He is the guy who is following his passion and making his dreams come true. He put pen to paper a couple of years back, and he is following his dreams. We all need to do that. He is such an inspiration. So you're going to love this guy, Bernard Schaefer. Enjoy the podcast.
Hey, Patrick. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I gave a little bit of a bio. Do you want to add anything else on there?
Oh, I think that pretty much covers it all. I mean, I write, I work, I take care of the kids, and that's pretty much it. That's me.
Now, what made you, I always ask this with law enforcement people I bring on or ask to come on, what made you get into law enforcement?
My dad didn't give me too many other options at the time. I've spoken about this before in something I wrote about. But when I graduated, you know, I really was pretty directionless. I didn't have much going on. I hadn't done well in school, and my dad, who was a career cop in Horsham Township, where I grew up, he basically told me, he said, "Look, I'll pay for you to go to the police academy, but that's it." And I figured, okay, it was better than what I was doing, which wasn't much. And from there, it just seemed like an okay opportunity, given someone with, you know, my background at the time, and it, my appreciation for it actually evolved over time. I wasn't one of those people who knew right away they wanted to be a cop and dedicated themselves towards it. I actually got into the job and over the years, kind of found my way within it.
And I know you're a decorated criminal investigator. You worked a lot in narcotics, and you're a child forensic interviewer, so you're quite accomplished. You're well-rounded, which we encourage, at least I encourage my officers to be in my department, to be well-rounded. And I think, you know, when you work for a smaller agency, and you know, Bernard, I mean, it's, you almost have to become well-rounded. You have to be like a jack of all trades, because we don't have a lot of, you know, we just don't have like a traffic unit that does that all the time. And there's nothing wrong with that, but we just don't have the resources. You have to become more well-rounded.
It's very true. And, you know, even in smaller departments, though, where there's not a lot of opportunities to, you know, you don't have units you can transfer to, or there's not as much. I've always tried to encourage people, find something you really do enjoy and appreciate about the job and become an expert in it. Even if you don't have a special rank or a special title or a special office, whatever it is, the quality of what you do will begin to shine through, and you'll be known for that. And for me, I know it worked, because for me, very early on, I began to really specialize in investigations and interrogations and interviews. And I've spent more time in detectives as of now. It's my 18th year with the department I'm with now.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. I've spent more time in detectives than I did on the street, just because, you know, it's like anything else. You know, if you're a boss and you're saying, who do I have that can do this and wants to do it, and I'm not going to have to beg to do their job, exactly, and they'll do it well, you look for the people that are already doing it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that served me very well.
Now, let me ask you, before we get into your books and your writing, you know, what do you think, I mean, you've been doing this job a long time, Bernard. I mean, what do you think some of the challenges are, you know, that law enforcement, you know, I know most of us know some of the challenges we're dealing with now, but what do you think some of the challenges are going to be in the future with law enforcement? Just for your take, your opinion.
Sure. Well, they've certainly evolved rapidly over the past couple of years, right? You know, the stuff that we were worried about when we were in the academy is not the same stuff that we're worried about now.
Yeah, good point.
So here's my take on it. My take on it is in the future, law enforcement is going to have to evolve. you know, we've already begun to embrace the idea that we're more customer service oriented. We've begun to, you know, embrace the idea that, you know, people, I don't know if the terminology's made it out your way, but, you know, we begin to refer to people as consumers when we deal with them for mental health, you know, issues like that. Mm-hmm. So that trend is going to continue, and the public has a higher expectation of us now, you know, to overcome certain traditional hurdles. And I think they have a right to.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, and certainly as we move forward as a profession, we are going to have to get it through everybody's head that just because you could do it, you know, back in the 80s, you can't do that now. And we don't want people like that now. You know, one of the things that I tell my guys with criminal investigations is one of the most important jobs we have are background investigations for new hires. Mm-hmm. We got to keep the enemy from infiltrating our ranks, you know, and they want to get in, believe me. And I'm not talking about, you know, just terrorists or people like that. I'm talking about the people that want to become cops because they want to do bad things to good people. Mm-hmm. We've got to identify them and keep them out, because all it's done over the past couple of years is bite us on the butt, and it's only going to get worse. You know, mm-hmm. whoever you are is going to be exposed. They'll be exposed very, very quickly out there on the street. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, with the way technology is, the whole world will know it. And everybody in law enforcement suffers when one guy does something stupid or criminal.
Yeah.
So we got to get with that.
And that's a good point. I mean, I don't think the average person out there knows. I mean, maybe the people listening to the show, and definitely you do, that what goes into. You know, the background process, you know, and the selection process for people to become officers. I mean, it is very intensive. It is very comprehensive. We look at it, and I'm sure your agency does the same thing, Bernard. And people always ask me, or not always, but sometimes they'll ask me, you know, well, how did that person ever become a police officer? And I'm sure you get the same question, too.
Sure.
And a lot of times, or sometimes, I shouldn't say a lot, you know, there's bad officers, I think, in every department. You know that. I mean, there's sure. officers probably. I mean, I'm not talking about just, you know, kind of lazy and bad attitudes and stuff like that. And I think there is probably people out there or officers that are, you know, corrupt. But I don't think it's anywhere near where people think. But my point is that when people say, well, how'd that person become a police officer? Yeah, there's a chance they might have slipped through the cracks in the interview process and the recruiting process. But what usually happens in my experience, Bernard, I don't know about yours, I want to ask you, get your opinion, is they start aligning themselves with the wrong people once they're cops. And that's how they become, you know, that's how they get into bad habits and things like that. I don't know what your opinion is on that.
I think there's two different ways. I think one is I definitely believe, you know, from what I've seen, that there are bad people mm-hmm. who mm-hmm. decide to become cops because they want to try to exploit what we have and who we are.
Sure.
But also as far as what you're saying, maybe not so much the criminal aspect or maybe the lazier aspect or people who don't want to do anything. People change over time on the job. I've certainly changed several times, you know, during my career. Mm-hmm. You evolve, you know, based on your circumstances, based on the people you work with, based on, you know, your age and your experience, the things that you deal with, you begin to see things a different way. Mm-hmm. And I certainly feel different about the job, and I'm a different kind of cop now than I was when I first started, and I'm sure you are too. Mm-hmm. And for everybody, that's not always a good thing. For mm-hmm. some people, they go the wrong way.
Yeah, and I felt, you know, that's a great point you make, because, you know, there was a point in my career that I was very cynical and I was very negative, and then I started, you know, kind of hanging out with you know, people who are more positive, you know, and that kind of really helped me a lot and, you know, changed my outlook. And of course you get older and you mature a little bit more. Hopefully. It's interesting. Well, let's get to your writing. Were you always interested in writing?
Yes. Yeah. I've written, since I was a very small kid. Mm-hmm. I kid around about it, but it's the truth. The very first thing I recall writing was West Side Story 2, The Revenge of Tony, because I could not deal with how the movie ended. And I was a little kid, and that continued. I continued to pursue literature, always been a very heavy reader. And before I went to the police academy, I was writing short stories and sending them off, trying to find, you know, magazines that would publish them. And, you know, it's something that I've continued to pursue for my whole life.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know how You know how cops are, Bernard. Sure. So, you know, do cops give you a hard time? Because I'm sure a lot of them yes. are supportive. But you got that element that's like, what the hell are you doing, man? What are you writing this stuff for? I mean, and,
sure.
And I think it's great because, you know, people don't understand that, you know, cops are brutal sometimes. I know that. You know that. And you know, to be that successful like you are and to kind of, you know, get the razzing you probably do. I mean, how do you deal with that?
You know, I think anything that you do, you're gonna catch grief over, particularly, you know, in that kind of environment. You know, generally it's just good natured fun. It's like hanging out with all your brothers your sisters and you know, you're never ever gonna get a sincere like, hey man, I'm proud of you, way to go. No, it's just not that kind of thing. And you know, that's on one level. I mean, you know, I'm sure you know as well as I do, you know, cops can be like a bunch of little old ladies, you know, the knitting circle and gossipy.
Cops don't gossip, do they?
Sure, no, they cause problems, and everybody's got conspiracy theories and cliques and the whole nine yards. You know, to be honest with you, the best thing I ever figured out was my life is a lot easier when I just really mind my own business. I call it the Bernie bubble. I stay in the Bernie bubble. If it doesn't affect me, if it doesn't involve me, I stay out of it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't get involved in all the in-house drama.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't mean just in our own house. I mean, you know, there's cop drama everywhere. Like there's cop drama, you know, in other departments, there's cop drama in, you know, other states with other departments, and you can start getting involved in all of that. I stay away from it. Yeah. You know, if it doesn't involve me, I don't know about it. And that even carries over to criminal investigations. I get a lot of, you know, questions from people. They want to ask me, what's your take on this case? What's your take on that? And I tell them, I don't have an opinion because I didn't investigate it. I don't know. I don't have all the facts. For me to ever have an opinion about something, I really need to sit down and look and kind of investigate it myself. Otherwise, I don't know.
Yeah. And I imagine the people that were giving you crap early on, the more successful you become with, they're probably not giving you crap that much more because they're like, holy shit, man, this guy's, he's killing it. He's got,
I get a lot of questions. Are you writing about me? Like, do you know about me? And I always tell everybody the same thing. I'm like, yep, you're in the book. And they, well, who am I in the book? I'm like, I can't tell you that. You gotta go find yourself.
Am I going to get some money from you mentioning me in the book? Because I know that's about me. Am I going to get some royalties from that? Or?
No, never. Bad chance of seeing Jesus.
Now, I always ask the authors who are on the show, I'm going to ask you the same thing. What are some of the challenges with writing a book? Because I know it can be difficult. And where do you get your inspiration and ideas? Because you got several books out there, different genres, and we'll talk about it a little bit. You know, what's the inspiration and what are some of the challenges and what's the inspiration or ideas? Where do you get that?
So the challenges would be for any author is it's a progression of ability. So your first progression would be learning how to construct a sentence and a paragraph and, you know, all the stuff you need in your basic toolkit, to borrow an analogy from Stephen King. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a toolkit, and the toolkit is, you know, the specific tools you need for grammar and for all that stuff. And then the next, after you can do that, the next progression would be to tell a story. And it could be any length. You know, most people start with short stories. Mm-hmm. But now you're beginning to see, like, character development. You're beginning to see the structure of the story itself, the plot, the dialogue, things like that. Can you tell a compelling story within, you know, 12,000 words? And then from there, the next progression is getting into novels. And novels are a whole different animal, just in the way that they're structured, the way that the endurance that it takes to keep it strong all the way through. What we see now with especially with the indie movement, is we see a lot of shorter novels coming out. And what to me, that kind of worries me, because I think that writers as a whole, you know, the majority at least, are kind of losing the ability to craft, you know, the properly structured novels, and are kind of just rushing it out the door, either not incomplete or too short, because they want to try to chop it up into several volumes and make more money. Mm-hmm. So
what advice?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, sir.
As far as inspiration, you know, it's whatever I'm interested in at the time. You know, I one of the reasons I write in so many different genres is because I have a lot of different interests. Mm-hmm. I've written Westerns, science fiction. I've written nonfiction, a literary novel. And now I went back to the thriller genre. Mm-hmm. It's whatever I feel like I have something to say and is powerful enough and meaningful enough to me that it warrants, you know, the months of my life it'll take getting it right.
And I think is really cool is that you were you did a lot of independent publishing, self-publishing, right? Is that what that means? Okay. And now you're on with Kensington Publications.
Yes.
Which is pretty awesome.
Thank you.
You have all these books out there. And well, before we get into that, what advice, because you've heard, I don't know if you've heard, you probably have, Bernard, that every cop has at least one good book in them.
Yep.
With all the stories and all the stuff we see.
Hold on. They think they do.
What advice would you, because I know that people are going to listen to this. I work with a couple of guys that, you know, always talk about putting pen to paper and writing a book, but they never take that substantial step forward. They never do it, dude. And the only thing we have is just time. You know that, you know, following your passion. So what advice would you give for some aspiring authors out there?
You know, I hear the same exact thing. And especially when I first began to publish my work, I'd hear, I could write a book. I already know the title. Everybody knows the title for the book, but nobody gets started. So there's a difference between publishing a book full of war stories and your own personal observations or experiences on the street. And we see that a lot now. There's a lot more guys that are actually getting it together to publish, you know, since you can do it on Kindle independently now. Mm-hmm. That are sitting down, taking the time to publish their, let's call it a memoir, right? But there is a difference between somebody that writes a diary and somebody that writes a novel. Mm-hmm. There's a difference between being an author and someone who writes a book. And if you want to do what I do, then you have to work at it, and you have to work at it as hard as anything you've ever done in your life, because you're going to have to study other novels to see what, you know, how they're done. That's really the only training you need, but you have to read it with a student's eye. You know, you have to study the greats. You have to study what's current. You have to study what works and what doesn't work until you finally begin to understand, okay, this is what a novel is and what it's supposed to look like and feel like and how it's structured. And I guarantee you 90% of the people that have ever said that to you or said that to me are people that don't particularly read. Mm-hmm. Or if they do read, they don't read in the style that they want to write in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't consider myself one of these cops that just wrote a book. I'm not. I'm an author. I live an author's life. It's my profession. I have two professions. So, yeah. but that's the only advice that I could give anyone. Clearly, there's other people who have done it different ways than I do it. But this is the only way I know how to do it. You know, I'm committed to it like I'm a monk.
Yeah.
Because that's how serious I take it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's like, you know, you have to take that. I mean, it's easy. It's not rocket science. If you want to do it, you have to take that step. You know, hope is not a strategy. It's not going to fall in your lap, and you have to take that step forward. And nowadays, with the technology we have, my God, you're an author. I mean, it used to be a lot harder to become an author than it is today, right?
Oh, my God. You have no idea. I try to explain it to people that don't quite understand how it used to be. Mm-hmm. It used to be hell.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
You'd spend all this time working on a short story or a book, and you would submit them through the mail, right? And the people you would submit them to would generally not want simultaneous submissions, which means they don't want you to send it anywhere else because they want to be the only people to read it just in case they like it. But the problem is they'd be so overwhelmed with submissions that they wouldn't, if they gave you a response, they wouldn't get back to you for 6 months. Mm-hmm. So you'd wait and you'd wait and you'd wait. And meanwhile, you try to work on something else, but you couldn't send it anywhere else. So by the time the year ended, you've maybe submitted this one piece to two or maximum three places, right? And you'd never hear anything back. There'd be no critical feedback at anything. You'd get a form letter that just said, thanks, we're not interested. Mm-hmm. So you really had no idea what you were doing or what worked or what didn't. It's so incredibly different now. the opportunities that are out there, even just to build up a small audience or just to get feedback or just to you know, put something out in the marketplace and see if it's a work that people would be interested in buying. You know, you'll find out real quick how good you are when the reviews start rolling in.
Yeah.
You know, from trolls and people that, you know, do not care about your feelings. When, you know, if you look at, go on any of my titles on Amazon and just click on the 1-star reviews, because anytime you, if you have a book and it's been reviewed, you're going to have good and bad.
Oh, sure.
Look at some of the incredibly outrageous stuff people have said about me and my work. You know, and you find out real quick, you know, if you can make it or not.
Well, and the, you know, I'm preaching to the choir, that most people could not take that kind of criticism. Most people, well, maybe not, but you know, a lot of people out there, once they get that first rejection, once they say, you know, you get that first negative feedback, they're going to give up. They're going to hang it up. Somebody like you, and I've dealt with this with podcasting too. I've gotten scathed on iTunes for the podcast. Okay. And I'm like, okay, you know, I can let that bother me. I'm going to get up and go forward, which I have. And same with you. And that's the one thing, you know, too, is that you're going to get, it's not all going to be all rainbows and unicorns. You know that. You're going to face criticism, and you're going to face, you know, people who give you crap about it, but you got to keep going.
Yeah. I just don't care. So. Yeah.
Well, no. But you do, you know, I mean, but my point is that when people talk crap about you or give you a bad review or whatever, you don't let that consume you. You know what I mean?
No.
I mean, I'm assuming you don't, because you wouldn't be kicking out books and stuff all the time.
I don't write. Well, the truth is I don't write for them. I write for me.
Exactly. And that's what's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's how you have to be. I'll be the first one to admit that I am a constantly evolving author, and the way that I write now is not the way that I wrote then.
Yeah.
And I look back on some of my earlier work and I think, man, I never would have written that today.
Yeah.
One of my books, Whitechapel, you know, it's a very, very gruesome and graphic depiction of the Jack the Ripper murders, which I wanted it to be at the time, because I didn't want to pull any punches about what really happened to those women. But when I look at it now, I'm like, did you have to like do all that? I don't think we had to go that far, but maybe it's not something I would do now. And maybe that's the reason why the book has to exist in the form that it's in, because the author that told it felt the need to do it. And, you know, not everybody understands that. It might not be something I do now, but it's once you finish a book and you send it out there into the world, it's not yours anymore. It belongs to the people that buy it. And they get to say or embrace it or don't embrace it, however they feel, because everybody brings their own experiences to it.
Yeah.
And the podcast, you know, that you have, I don't know if the people that are leaving you reviews are cops or have the same experience, you know. But what I see with some of my police oriented stuff is people come to it with preconceived notions about cops already, and or they might even come to it with preconceived notions about independent authors. So they're carrying all that baggage with them. So by the time they hear what you have to say or they read what I have to write, you know, there's already something in place for them to respond how they're going to respond.
Yeah.
And, you know, oh, well.
Yeah, I'm the same as you, Bernard. And, you know, just keep going, man. I want to talk a little bit about your recent book that's going to come out in August, The Thief of All Light. Can you give us some information about that?
I have a 2-book deal with Kensington, so it's the first of two. I was very, very fortunate with the deal that we got. And the basic premise is Carrie Santero is a young female police officer out in the sticks in western Pennsylvania, and she dreams of working these big hotshot detective cases. But she, with the apartment that she's at, she just doesn't have the opportunity to do it. And her boss used to be a county detective, and him and his old partner came across a really nasty, nasty predator who was kidnapping and killing children, to the point that it shattered like the lives of the people that worked that particular job. Her boss is like a ROD. Do you guys have that expression out there? Retired on duty.
Oh yeah. Rod. Rod.
he's retired on duty. And just wants to like ride it out as the chief of this little podunk town.
Mm-hmm.
And his partner, the one who's like the detective savant that was able to really understand what was going on, this guy, Jacob Rain, his life completely crashed after the case. He wound up getting arrested. He wound up getting put in jail. And since he got out, he hasn't been seen from. Mm-hmm. So events happen where a bona fide serial killer, this guy who is adopting the personalities of all the other serial killers that have come before, using their victim patterns, using their MOs, using all of that, he shows up. And nobody has any idea how to deal with him because he can't be profiled. He can't be traced because there's no victim pattern. Mm-hmm. They don't know what they're dealing with. And so the first part of the book is a quest where Carrie has to go try and find this missing detective, this Jacob Rain. And then clearly the second part of the book is going to be how they deal with this nightmare that has come out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. And I'll have this linked up in the show notes. There, you do a bonus video on KensingtonBooks.com where you actually talk about this, a video of you, and I will have that linked up in the show notes. Cool. Letting people see you and talk about the book a little bit more. But one thing that I thought was really cool, I mean, your whole story is really amazing, Bernard. But you used to be an actor in your life.
That's true. As a kid, yeah.
Which I think is cool, man. You gave up probably a pretty good career. You were on Nickelodeon mm-hmm. for a while, and you gave up that to go be in law enforcement, which is really cool.
Well, it didn't quite go that way. So
okay.
So I was a child actor. Mm-hmm. I was very, very active up until about the age of 14. Mm-hmm. And at 14, the show that I was on Nickelodeon, I left the show. It was a lot of travel, staying in or living in New York City to do the show. And, I completely missed. Remember I told you when I graduated high school, I had done terribly in school?
Yeah.
The reason I did that is because I wasn't there for about 4 years.
Oh, okay.
With like very minimal participation. So I had no idea how to take tests and write papers and do homework. It made no sense to me at all. Because I had been in front of cameras and doing all this other stuff. Once that ended and I came home, it wasn't going to start up again. It wasn't like, I could say to everybody, hey, come on, we're going to start going back to New York all the time to audition and do all this or that. By that point, everybody was pretty burned out and it was over.
Yeah.
So I kind of just rode out the rest of my time at high school until, like I said, the police academy became an option.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're glad you took the route that you did, and glad your dad paid for you to go to the academy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure you're an amazing police officer in an organization. Bernard, where can people find your work?
They can find me on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com. They can find my website, BernardSchaefer.com. Or like you had mentioned, that one page on Kensington for the pre-sale.
Yes.
The other thing that's cool about that is if anybody pre-orders the book and registers on that Kensington page where that video of me is, you're going to get exclusive bonus content that I promise you is going to blow your mind. You're going to get something that nobody else has, and it is an integral part of the linking book one and book two mm-hmm. that only the people that take a chance and pre-order the book are going to get. So I'd strongly encourage you, if you pre-order the book, to register on that page.
Cool. Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
I really appreciate it. A lot of the interviews and podcasts I do are way more related to writing than they are to actual police work, or they're, civilians that just have some basic questions mm-hmm. For me. But it's really cool to talk to somebody that's in the profession that understands. And I've heard some of your other podcasts. I think you're doing really good work. I want to encourage you to keep it up.
Thank you, sir. And anything you need from us here, the CJ Evolution team, Bernard, you let us know. We wish you the most success in the future. Keep doing a great job with your books and being a great author. And more, thank you for your service in law enforcement. That's a long time to be in law enforcement. And thank you for your service, sir.
I appreciate it. You be safe out there, and everybody listening, be safe. Wear your vests. Always wear your seatbelt. Arrive alive. Get home to your families.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for listening to CJ Evolution. Be sure to head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast, and reach out to Patrick on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Anchor, or Snapchat. We'll see you next time on CJ Evolution.